looks like a clinic on how not to do things on the baseball field.
Now, the show that Red Sox Nation turns to first. This is Boston's most listened to nightly baseball show, The Baseball Reporters with Tony Maz. Brought to you by Big Y Grocery Store, T-Mobile, Ron Bouchard's Auto Stores, Integrity from Marvin Windows and Doors, TestTrips.com, Acura of Auburn, Anderson McQuay, Direct Federal Credit Union, Gravely Lawnmowers, AceTicket.com, WFXT-TV, and Mohegan Sun. On Boston's home for sports, 98.5, The Sports Hub.
There's a shot high and deep. He leaned on that, and it is gone. Machado with his 14th home run of the season. So there goes the shutout. Manny Machado with a blast.
So just like that, that's how it ended for David Price at Fenway Park last night. What could have been an absolutely great night for Price leaves a little bit of aftertaste. 617-779-0985 is your number here on the Baseball Reporters. That's where we're going to start with David Price. His performance last night against the Orioles, and a very simple question. Has he won you back? That was a pretty good game last night. Has he won you back? Because to me, he hasn't. And Jim Murray, I already know your answer, but go ahead and tell you it anyway.
Yeah, no, absolutely not.
Jimmy Stewart?
Nope.
So the answer to this question might actually be a little obvious, because Price hasn't done enough yet to win most people back. But that performance last night, excellent. Excellent. Or was it? And we're going to get to the particulars here in just a second. Let me just tell you up front, the Baseball Reporters is brought to you by Mohegan Sun. Unlimited possibilities await you at Mohegan Sun. Plan your stay at Mohegan Sun. .com. Excuse me, again, it's Friday here, so it's not that I have the greatest vocal cords in the world to begin with. They're starting to fade a little bit, as they usually do on Friday, but with regard to Price, boy, he was excellent last night, wasn't he? Good fastball, mixed his pitches, cutter in. Like, to me, that's how I want to see Price pitch. Attack batters, go after them, particularly right-handers on the inside part of the plate. But that ninth inning last night, tell me you didn't see the home run coming. Because we all did. You almost knew it. And so, again, and this is another question that goes along with the Price discussion. Is it possible to be winning a 6-0 game at home with two outs in the bottom of the ninth and one man on base and have a pressure at bat? Is that possible? Am I reading too much into that? Or was that actually a situation that you felt was kind of a big moment for David Price and he gave up a two-run home run? And it didn't cost you the game. Price stayed out there. He got the complete game. He got the win, and it was certainly a bounce-back performance. At the same time, you know what I would equate it to? Winning a golf tournament and making a bogey on the last hole. Like, so, you know, you win it relatively easily. You're in front pretty much the whole time. But then you get to the last hole, and you play like crap, and maybe even you double bogey it. Like, you kind of backslide a little on the last hole, and it just doesn't feel quite as good as it could have because of the way it ended.
Well, there's also more eyes on you, too, because people already know that the you know, it feels like it's predetermined because you've gotten this far. All you got to do is just finish it off, and finish it off hopefully as cleanly as you can. But, oh, more eyes on me. All of a sudden, it feels like there's a little bit more pressure. And so you bogey the hole, or in Price's case, you give up a two-run bomb to Manny Machado.
So, to me, that's what it is, Murray.
It's totally what it is. I don't think you're reading into it too much of it at all.
And look, you go back to the start before against Toronto. He didn't pitch that great in that game. He pitched okay. He pitched pretty well. A B performance. This was more like an A all the way through until the last two at-bats of the game. Then he gives up. And the home run to Machado was a bomb. And here's the other thing. The Orioles, boy, do they stink. That lineup stinks. That lineup is 14th in the American League in batting average, 14th in the American League in OPS. There's really only one guy you have to worry about, and that's Machado, whom Price gave up the two-run homer to end the night. So at the biggest moment of that game for him, Price faced their best hitter and gave up a two-run homer. And I know we're being critical of him because he brings a lot of it on himself. But Murray touched on this earlier, that Price only seems to beat the bad teams this year. He beats Tampa Bay. He beats Baltimore. I mean, Toronto's not very good either. Do you know what Price's record is? More importantly, because the one-loss record is deceiving, but I'm going to give you the numbers in total. When he has pitched against teams with a losing record, 2-2, but his ERA is 3.9, which isn't great, but it's consistent with what he's been basically in Boston. Okay, 2-2, 3.9. When he faces teams that have winning records, the ERA is 5.21. The one loss record remains at 2-2. But the ERA difference is 33% from losing teams to winning teams. So anytime Price has gone against a good lineup, he's been like an end-of-the-rotation starter. He's been pretty good against the bad teams, but he's been awful against the good ones. And I don't even know that you would say he's been great against the bad teams. I want to get to some other things here during the program, too. The Red Sox base stealing last night. This Kevin Gausman character, boy, was that embarrassing for the Orioles. And a very interesting story by Alex Speer in the Boston Globe that I want to get to regarding the catching situation. Christian Vasquez is behind the plate tonight with Drew Pomeranz on the mound, and I don't think he should be. But we'll give you the particulars there in a moment. In the interim, James is in Peabody. He kicks us off tonight. James, what do you got?
Hey, Maz, how you doing?
Good.
Love the show. Jim, how you doing?
Hi.
Maz, I got a question on David Price.
Go.
So I was at the game last night, and I don't really watch him that much, but I noticed that he was pitching from the stretch.
Yeah, he's done.
Has he been doing that all the time this year?
Yeah, he's done it, actually, believe it or not, James. He's done it pretty much for the whole time he's been in Boston, pretty darn close.
Now, did he always pitch from the stretch when he was in Tampa and Toronto?
So, you know what? I don't remember what he was like as a rookie. I'd have to go back and look. But, you know, he started in the big leagues as a reliever. And this is not uncommon now. A lot of guys are doing this a little bit more to just sort of simplify their deliveries. So I don't have any issue with Price doing it the way he's doing it. And there have been times pitching out of the stretch where he has pitched very well. Quickly, Jamie's in Ashland. Jamie, what do you got?
Yeah, with David Price, you know, a few days ago, you guys were killing him, absolutely killing him over the radio because of this carpal tunnel thing that was caused by playing video games. I told you guys, give him another shot. I think I was the only caller that said that. So I think this is going to work out just fine. He's going to come back to his old self. Let's not give up on him right away. And with respect to the finals, the NBA finals, could they have...
Okay, Jamie, it's a baseball show, so we can't get into basketball at the moment. And look, I'll tell you, I don't think anybody's giving up on Price. But a lot of this stuff, he brings it on himself. There's no defending him. And don't embrace him too much over beating up on the Orioles. The Orioles are terrible. I think they're 13-30. If they don't have the worst record in the American League, they're second worst. They're atrocious. That is a horrible team. Horrible. They're old. They're slow. They have no pitching. Okay, the Orioles smell. They are really bad. So what I need to see is Price do this consistently against good teams, against everybody. We all need to see it consistently. And then maybe he can help them. Because unless he's a number two starter, unless he pitches to the quality of a number two starter, he doesn't help them. They have plenty of guys to pitch in the spots from 3 through 5 in the rotation. They got plenty of guys that can do that. They don't have anyone else that can fill that number two spot behind Chris Sale. So that's what he has to be. That's what they signed him for. And that's what we have to grade him on. Truth be told, they signed him to be their ace. But when they got Sale, they took some pressure off. So he's here to be the number two starter now. If he's not that, he's no good to them, especially at $31 million a year. I want to get to that base running last night. Because, boy, the Orioles, that was a joke. Give the Red Sox credit because they did. They exploited Kevin Gausman. They took advantage. And maybe even they stole signs or clearly scouted something. We'll get to that next.
We have the Sox covered. The Baseball Reporters, 98.5, the Sports Hub. We have the Sox covered. This is the Baseball Reporters. Tony Mazzarotta, show that Red Sox Nation turns to first. 98.5, the Sports Hub.
Well, there goes Betts. He got an incredible jump, and he is in there standing up. Didn't even have to slide.
I mean, he just caught him. He was not even paying attention. Look at that. That is ridiculous. You don't see that every night. He knew he was locked in somehow, and he wasn't even thinking about him. That's the easiest stolen base he ever had in his life.
There goes Bradley. Throw to first base. It doesn't matter. He's already sliding into second. That's the second time the Red Sox have stolen Gausman. Absolutely blind tonight.
Totally. I mean, you never see this, let alone twice. He's frozen. He gets locked in, and they know it. He's not looking over there. He goes through this. He does the same thing each and every time. And they got a read on it.
There he goes again. Another throw to first. And again, he steals a blind. Well, this has been going on all night. And Gausman has yet to pick up on it. I don't know if I've seen anything quite like this.
Never seen anything like this. What in the world is going on? What? I can't tell you what he's doing. Obviously, they picked up on something, knowing that he's not really looking over there. He's in his own world.
Now he's been arguing with a home plate umpire.
That's so embarrassing. It really is.
Well, Dennis Eckersley wasn't the only one who thought that was embarrassing for Kevin Gausman and the Baltimore Orioles last night. The Red Sox stole five bases on Gausman, and that is saying something unto itself. Okay, that you give up five stolen bases, that is saying something. What is even more amazing is that the catcher never made a throw on any of them. None. On two of them, and they happened in the same inning, the runner broke for second, and Gausman threw to first. The runner was already at second. One time it was Mookie Betts. I think the other one was Jackie Bradley. By the time they got to second, the first baseman couldn't even throw the ball. They were past halfway to second base when Gausman threw to first. So I wonder if he can't see the runner or what. Whatever it is, the Red Sox picked up on something because they abused that guy last night. And Gausman had not allowed a steal this year before that game. The Red Sox, by the way, now fifth in the major league in steals. Okay, so look, I think stolen bases are overrated and relatively worthless. Okay, situationally, it's a weapon, as we learned in 2004 with Dave Roberts. Okay, you need one in a big spot. You got to have a guy that can get it. It helps. It can help. But overall, I don't think there's any correlation between the number of bases you steal and whether or not you can win. And on the last one, after Bogaerts hit the home run, I shouldn't say on the last steal, after Bogaerts hit the homer, Buck Showalter was across the third baseline and almost to the mound as Xander Bogaerts was rounding third base. Typically, it is customary for the manager to wait until the batter crosses the plate. Everyone's off. Then he goes out and gets his pitcher. Buck Showalter couldn't get out there fast enough to get Gausman out of that game. He had it with his pitcher, and not just because the pitcher gave up a home run. In fact, it had more to do with the fact that Gausman could not control the Red Sox running game. I mean, when I say not control it, it's not like he has a big leg kick and they're able to get good jumps. They were running two-thirds of the way to second base, but and then he would throw to first. I mean, he looked like a rattled little leaguer, a high schooler out there. Here's what Showalter said after the game.
Buck, on the stolen bases, I mean, nobody even tried to steal against Kevin prior to the night. What was going on? What did they have out there?
No, yeah, they have been breaking early. He's just, you know, the reasons are pretty apparent. It's just execution of... You know, when you realize that you've got to step off as opposed to throw to first after they've already gone. And Kevin, he'll get it right, but it's very frustrating for him because you know, it's not something usually there. But it's a pretty common trend not to be correcting it, so we need to do that.
So, again, I told you, Gausman had not allowed a steal before last night, but you heard Showalter say there that guys have been getting big breaks, meaning they've been running on pitches or maybe balls have been fouled off, maybe they've been hitting runs, whatever it is. Gausman can't hold runners. Wow, is that, like, I started to wonder, maybe this guy can't throw to second base. Like, maybe he's got some sort of mental block, like John Lester. Really, that was embarrassing. So, I give the Red Sox credit for identifying whatever it was that they identified. I'd love to know more on this for the people that are over there covering the team. Like, give me particulars. What did they see with Gausman? Somebody identified something where they said, as soon as this guy sets... Count to one and then go, because he does the same thing every time.
Just real quick, Matt, you don't expect, because there's been bad blood between these two teams before, at least going to last year, you don't think there's going to be any kind of repercussions here, right? There's no, this isn't a, you know, baseball
like
has all these.
Showing them up.
Yeah, you know, baseball has all these stupid unwritten rules because this guy might have some kind of tick or whatever, and they took advantage of it. To me, I just look at this as gamesmanship, but because Showalter can be a bit of a red ass, and again, the bad blood between these two teams, will there be anything, any kind of fallout?
So, Murray, I rule out nothing, because you never know what's going to send someone into a spin. Okay, you don't know.
But have
know.
You ever seen anything like this before?
Not really, no. Not like this. I've seen cases where guys ran and a pitcher didn't throw because he couldn't throw to a base.
Well, you know, right, with Lester.
Lester, Matt Young, years ago. This goes back years and years ago. Matt Young with the Red Sox had a mental block. They signed him to a big contract. He couldn't throw to bases either. Roger Clemens couldn't throw to bases. Go back and look at some of the things Clemens did to his, during his career. A lot of times he had trouble throwing to bases. There was like a mental block there with Clemens, too. So I rule out nothing with the Orioles, that they would strike back. It looked to me, though, like Showalter was more pissed off at his pitcher last night than anything else.
He was straight up disgusted.
And I also got the sense that the little spat, the spitting match last year, was really more Showalter-Farrell than it was Red Sox-Yankees. Like, that felt to me like two geniuses arguing. Like, you know, one's trying to prove that he's smarter than the other.
Gotcha.
So that one felt like a measuring contest, if you catch my drift. Let's go back to your calls. And Joe, who's in Peabody? Joe, what do you got?
Hey, man. So, David Price, that question you asked. So, I'm watching the game, right? And David Price has a way to go before he earns back my respect, as far as I'm concerned.
And he should.
And you took it out of my mouth. Like, the Orioles suck bad. And I'm watching the game. I look at my son. I go, watch this. Boom. The ball goes out of the park. And it's just like if he came here and he locked in like Buckholz when he threw that no-hitter and just stayed that way, he wouldn't be dealing with this. He's just a baby, right?
Okay. Sorry, Joe. I lost you there at the end. But yes, David Price has acted like a two-year-old completely. So all of a sudden, like, we're supposed to come out here after a good game and say that everything's fixed. It's not, because it's all about the consistency. Anybody can have a good run for a little bit. Happens all the time. Lots of guys have nice little runs. Hell, lots of guys have nice seasons. But the really good ones do it year in and year out, and there is a consistency and dependability and reliability to those guys. And I don't think Price has it. I know Murray took joy in that home run that Price gave up to Machado last night. It sounds like Brian in a car did as well. Brian, what do you got?
So I'm watching the game last night with my buddies playing poker, and I say to them out loud, I said, I hope Machado hits a two-run bomb right here. And then it happened. And my takeaway is, God hates David Price, and I should ask for something different.
Okay.
I don't even know if I'd have that kind of a harsh critique.
Yeah, I don't know that I would go quite that far.
Maybe the baseball God?
If you are deeply religious, right, then you know you believe that God loves everybody, I think is sort of how the mantra goes. Right. But nonetheless, I think, though, there were a lot of people like that guy last night, Murray. And you were one of them.
Definitely. I have no shame in saying that. I'm fed up with the act. Like I said on the afternoon show, I'm at the point, man, as after all the thing, it was not even so much the video gaming. I get it. That's the world we live in now. It's the belly aching about the allergies. It's always going to be something with this guy. And we know that he hates it here. And yes, I'd like him to pitch as well as he can to help the team. But I just think, again, last night to me is fool's gold. He can't do it against the best competition. He taps out against the Yankees. So you know what? What I want from him anytime he goes out there, I want to see his face get ripped off. But the Red Sox ultimately win a game. It's like 9-8. I want them to win, but basically in spite of him.
So last night was some sort of like perverse pleasure for Red Sox fans, I'm telling you. Because I think many of them felt what you felt last night. I know I was watching it going, oh, God, don't give up a home run here.
But were you surprised by it?
No.
You
could feel it coming.
Yeah.
It was completely, utterly predictable. You could feel it coming. That's where it was headed. Because at the end of the day, this guy just put so much pressure on himself in even the most basic situation that you know there's a mistake coming. I mean, Eckersley said it last night during the broadcast. That home run was akin to the one he gave up to Chris Davis in Oakland in a 1-1 game. Cora sent him back out for the eighth. He left him in there against all those right-handed batters when he had Carson Smith up in the bullpen. And at the time, we liked Carson Smith. But he had him out ready to go. Cora left him in, and Price gave up a home run to Chris Davis to lose the game. And last night didn't blow the game, but it felt like the same kind of thing. Like there was something to be gained there. There was something Price wanted, and he got in his own way. He couldn't make the pitch under pressure. It's really an underrated part of a, you know, a superstar in baseball, an ace pitcher, and then especially in the postseason. Because every pitch is a big pitch in the postseason, or pretty damn close to it. And Price just can't do it. Interestingly, though, last night, Sandy Leon was behind the plate for Price. It was the first time this year, and it might have been Price's best game or one of his best games. Certainly the best he's pitched in a while. Alex Speer did an analysis of the Red Sox catchers this season, and more specifically, of how the pitchers have worked with them, the details of which were very interesting. We'll get to that after Murray gets you caught up on headlines.
The Baseball Reporters, 98.5, The Sports Hub. From the
You're the one who threw the pitch.
To the clubhouse.
You're a reliever short.
To the corner office.
That sends all the wrong messages.
We have the Sox covered.
Because that's the way I look at it.
The Baseball Reporters on 98.5, the Sports Hub.
It was good to see defensively what they did. I mean, it was a fun game to watch. Very clean. What he did on the mound, what David did, was amazing. And the at-bats and running the bases, it was probably one of the best games we have played the whole season.
It's Alex Cora after last night's game. One of the better games the Red Sox have played all year. And it's true, they haven't had that many where you come out of it and you say, wow, that was airtight. That's certainly that whole series in Anaheim against the Angels. They played well. I mean, they just blew doors that weekend. It was 27-3 or something, the run scored in that series. It was an ass-kicking. But last night, all the way around, starting pitching was good. The fact he went the distance, the defense was good. You ran the bases well. You get some power. All of it. All of it. It was a complete game, albeit against one of the worst teams in baseball this year. And just looking quickly, I think the Orioles they're tied for the second worst record in the league with Kansas City. The White Sox are worse. And it's the tied for the second worst record in baseball. And Baltimore is 3-17 on the road. 3-17. But this is all a roundabout way to get to the catching situation, which I am going to do here in an instant. Because Alex Spear of the Globe had some very, very interesting numbers about the catching situation today. I don't know. I think it was online, the story was posted. I don't think it was in the paper. Mike is in a car. Mike, what do you got?
Yeah, hey, guys. You know, look, it's nice to be able to talk positively about the Red Sox base running. But last night I thought the steals they were doing were great. I thought, obviously, you mentioned before that they either had scouted or they picked something up during the game. And let's call it what it is. The best thing that happened in the bottom of the fifth inning was Andrew Benintendi's sack fly, which meant he wasn't on base.
Yeah, right. Maybe that's part of the reason the base running was good last night, Mike. The Murray or Jimmy, if you would, just do me a favor and see if anybody has followed up on the base running. I missed this today. So did anyone disclose what the Red Sox picked up on Gausman that they were able to exploit? What was it that they noticed that allowed them to completely abuse him when he was on the mound? Because clearly there was something there that they detected. My guess is nobody talked about it. Okay, but there was, I mean, that was embarrassing for Baltimore last night. In fact, I'd go so far as to say that it's one thing to steal five bases. You want to give the Red Sox credit for steals, you give them credit for steals. For not even throwing? That's on Baltimore. I mean, that's ineptitude. Matt's in a car. Matt, what do you got?
Hey, guys. I just want to talk about Price's pitch selection. I was at the game last night, and I play in college, and the guy's one of the most predictable pitchers on the planet. I mean, his fallback pitch is his cutter. And, you know, I'm in the ballpark. Machado, if you remember, it just fouled back a fastball, and you could tell Price was sweating because he was like, I don't want this guy to put my fastball in the orbit. And then I'm like, he's throwing the cutter. It's his fallback. And if you remember, he threw his cutter to Chris Davis when he pooped his pants in Oakland, too. So, I mean, I think the guy's just super predictable. He's got the stuff, but that pitch is his fallback comfort pitch.
Well, so Matt, look, he throws a lot of cutters. Here's what I would tell you, too, about the cutter. If he puts it in the right place, it works. This happened to him a lot his first year here. For whatever reason, his first year here, he tried to throw that cutter on the outside corner to right-handed batters. And the ball would cut into the middle of the plate, and it would get obliterated. It happened over and over and over again. Now, there's all types of analysis that's been done as to what Price is now doing differently. One of the things is that he's moved to the third base side of the mound. There was a story about this in Sports Illustrated not too long ago. And I'm not even going to get into the particulars. All I'm going to tell you is that when he throws his cutter into righties and he gets it in enough, it's a great pitch for him. A great pitch. When he doesn't get it in quite far enough, it is susceptible to what happened in Oakland with Chris Davis and what happened last night with Machado. Okay, so it's all about location with that pitch. What do you got, Murray?
Well, no, I had an update on all the stolen bases last night. Alex Spear of the Boston Globe posted a story about an hour and a half ago. So now they're questioning whether or not the Red Sox, it sounds like, might have been
stealing signs.
Stealing signs. Because no one did. You, I don't know if you. Apologies if I wasn't listening. I didn't hear you say this earlier. But did you know that no one had attempted a stolen base on Gausman the whole season?
Yes. Yeah.
So now, because of that, he said, you know, it was weird. Two or three times they stole on me. They were picking them off. Kind of raises some eyebrows, so on and so forth. But there's really no information further if they had picked up on something, and that's why they ended up getting that many stolen bases.
Yeah, I did see. I saw a comment by Gausman where he said both of them I was picking, meaning that he was. He was throwing him. He was making a pickoff move.
Yeah,
and they took off. So, but on one of them, the Bradley one, there was no one on second base. So I don't know how they stole that sign unless it came from the dugout and they picked up something with Showalter.
Just sounds like sour grapes.
So if they're calling the pickoffs from the dugout, then maybe they did pick up on that. But again, there was a double steal later that they took second and third, and there was no throw by the catcher. So, you know, to me, there's something that he's doing that's predictable.
Are they using Apple Watches again?
Well, it could be. I wouldn't rule that out either, Jimmy. I mean, by the way, check out the Yankees' home and road numbers offensively, as well as the Red Sox. This is like one of the oldest tricks in the book. You know, you build your team to your ballpark, and maybe you also hide a camera in the padding out in center field. Who the hell knows? Something like that. I wouldn't rule that out either. These guys are devious. Last night, though, with Price pitching, if I'm not mistaken, Sandy Leone was catching for the first time this year. So Alex Spear of the Globe wrote this today, and in fact, he says it right here. Leone was making his first start of the year with Price on Thursday, and the results were spectacular. The same had been true for much of 2016, when the left-hander put up easily his best numbers with Leone behind the dish. So Alex Spear certainly suggesting that there's some sort of connection there between Leone and Price. However, it might not just be David Price with Leone. Spear writes, of the 10 current members of the Red Sox pitching staff who have thrown at least 10 innings to both catchers over the last 2 years, virtually every one of them has been more effective with Leone behind the plate, and many of them significantly so. So did you hear that? Okay, again, of the 10 current members of the Red Sox pitching staff who have thrown at least 10 innings to both Leone and Vasquez over the last 2 years, virtually every one of them has been more effective with Leone behind the plate, and many of them significantly so. Nine of the pitchers, including all of the relievers, have a lower ERA and OPS with Leone than with Vasquez. Eight pitchers have allowed fewer homers per batter with Leone behind the plate. Eight have a higher strikeout rate with Leone behind the plate than Vasquez. The only Red Sox pitcher who has worked quite a bit with both catchers while enjoying better results with Vasquez is Drew Pomeranz, whose poor numbers with Leone have been forged over the course of two starts. Okay, so Alex Spear is saying there that Pomeranz's numbers with Leone were skewed by a couple of really bad outings. Nonetheless, Pomeranz is pitching tonight. Vasquez is behind the plate. Okay, and Pomeranz's ERA with Leone catching is over 6. And I'll give you the exact numbers here because I looked it up a second ago. So with Sandy Leone, his ERA, Pomeranz's ERA is 6.60. With Vasquez, it's 3.35. So Vasquez is behind there tonight. Now, in spring training, Alex Cora said that they really weren't going to go with personal catchers. But when you hear these numbers, and given the ineptitude of both of those guys offensively, shouldn't Leone be catching more than Vasquez? So Blake Swihart can't get into the lineup because he can't catch. So now we have a case where Leone and Vasquez both have caught a number of guys on the staff for a significant number of innings. Both of those guys have been back there. And Leone's numbers with the pitching staff are way better than Vasquez's numbers with the pitching staff. And Spear goes on about the defense. And by the way, for all the talk that the Red Sox defense at catcher is good, I looked it up today on Fangraphs. Their catching position ranks in the bottom 5 of the major leagues in terms of runs saved at catcher. Okay, so their defensive catcher this year has not been what it's been in the past. It's not just the offense. The defense hasn't been good either. So, Alex Spear goes on. There are a number of ways in which efforts have quantified catcher defense, particularly its technical aspects in recent years, and those have improved, whether through pitch framing stats, where Leon grades better than Vasquez, pitch blocking, or comparison of throwing arms, and it appears Leon has been getting the ball to second more quickly than Vasquez this year, or pitch blocking data specifically. It's worth noting, for example, that Vasquez has been charged with 11 wild pitches and 3 pass balls this year, 14 total, while Leon has been behind the plate for 2 wild pitches and no pass balls. Now, Vasquez has caught twice the games that Leon has. I know I'm throwing a lot of numbers at you. But again, 14 wild pitches and pass balls for Vasquez, 2 for Leon. That's a ratio of 7-1. The playing time is 2-1. The point being is, Leon's a better catcher defensively. The pitching staff responds to him better based on the ERAs. And right now, he's swinging a better bat. So you tell me, who should be catching? Like, this one feels easy. But the Red Sox gave Christian Vasquez a 3-year, $13.5 million extension before the year. So I'm eager to see how this one plays out in the long term. But based on this story, Leon should be the catcher. And if Alex Speer is writing it, I suspect that John Henry knows it. John Henry does own the Globe. Scott is in Connecticut. Let's pop him up real quick. Jimmy, Scott, what do you got?
Hey, guys, how's it going?
Good.
I'll be real quick. Yeah, I usually call you guys for therapy, but I'm going to try to help you guys out tonight. Yeah, breaking news. Sandy Leon is a better catcher. I don't think that is up against debate. And today is not the day to be crapping on David Price. We'll do that again tomorrow. Let's give him a day, at least. He put up a strong effort last night, helped out the bullpen, set us up really good for tonight. And then just touching back on something that I had mentioned a couple of days ago, I have one more rule to add to my list. Benintendi can only advance one base at a time. Devers cannot throw, not allowed to throw the ball. And if Jackie Bradley Jr. is going to continue to play, he's only allowed to bunt or try to get hit by a pitch. He cannot swing the bat.
Okay, yeah, Scott, you're a barrel full of monkeys. What a comic. So look, Leon's the better catcher. I don't even remember what the point of half of that guy's phone calls were.
Lay off David Price. But no, because I thought it was, again, like you said, very telling that after his best start of the year, he's got the complete game shutout, but he wants to have the shutout and he gives up the home run, which is indicative of when the pressure's on, he crumbles.
Yeah,
so, no.
I'm not cutting Price slack after one good outing, after a bad month and a bad attitude, it feels like, during that bad month. So maybe they got him back on the beam. Maybe they did. But I need to see it over the long term.
Baseball Reporters with Tony Mann.